Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
Both platforms, and we're archived on Hoovy.tv. We're at Ferd Sports Bar and Grill right here in the heart of Champa Bay, where he's been for 29 years, providing all kinds of great service and wings, and I'll tell you what, the best wings in the Bay, back-to-back years, 20 and 21 for Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. And this is their 30th anniversary coming up in November. A lot to talk about there. No baseball across the street today, but next week there will be with a 140 first pitch against the Orioles, who are streaking, 1-5 out of 6.
Yeah, the Orioles aren't doing
too shabby. Six-game win streak for the Orioles.
How about that? I mean, they're another team with a low budget finding a way to win a couple games.
Well, and that American League East, we'll talk about that. That's what you'll talk about. We've got an absolute, and I say this every week, but we're getting more popular. Our platform, the diversity that we're bringing to the greater Tampa area, and, of course, streaming live all over, is getting recognized. And people are asking to be on the show because we want to stay local with great stories locally and touch upon the Rays, touch upon the Bucks, touch upon the Lightning. But we want to stay local with a lot of our focus, and we'll be launching the Prep Connection Hour here as the high school season starts. So stay tuned to that. A lot of exciting things coming down the pipe. But today we're going to talk to our World Soccer and Rowdies report with Buster DeLay, Jeff Mangold, former Yankees head trainer in the glory years. He's an owner of five World Series rings. He'll talk about this incredible start of this 2022 Bronx Bomber squad, if you will. I mean, it's unbelievable. Even what they did last night just blows me away against the Red Sox.
Yeah, they're finding a way to hit and pitch, and it's just unbelievable. I was one of their big doubters from the beginning. I didn't think that the pitching was going to be up to the caliber to win a lot of games. Of course, you always know, looking at the Yankees, that they're going to be able to hit a little bit, but pitching was always not their best.
Well, and it's unbelievable the pace that they're on right now.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been some incredible, you know, with 27 world championships and some incredible teams. But we'll let him talk about it. Jeff, and he's from my hometown, Sioux City. I will talk to him, and he's got a book out there, Pinstripes, My Years Training the New York Yankees. We'll talk about that as well. We're going to talk to Dave McCarthy, my old buddy. I haven't talked to him for a while. He's the executive director of the Ted Williams Foundation, right up your alley, young man. And then a character, a good friend of mine, and Billy McGee. He's former Lightning and Tampa Storm Arena football president, and now he is King Pickle. He is involved in pickleball, and we had an event last year, 9/11 down here. He just got done 4th of July event in Nashville, and it's the fastest growing participation sport in the world and America right now, and Billy's got his finger on the pulse there. And then, near and dear to your heart, the voice of Seminole High School, what'd you tell me they were?
Yeah, the voice is the Seminole Warhawks.
Warhawks, I gotta remember. The Warhawks.
Yeah, Brad Richardson, he'll be on with us later today. He's been announcing with Seminole High School for at least 10 years. And he also does football and other games. He recently did the high school all-star game.
Here, oh, the game you went to across the street?
Oh, yeah. I was up over
that
there.
That I wanted to go to?
I was helping him on the ones and twos a little bit.
Oh, were you?
Everything was good. Oh, yeah.
So you were a sidekick?
Yeah, I always try and stay there, try and keep him with a level head, and make sure he gets through the whole ordeal. So Brad's a good friend of mine, and he'll be great on the program. Lots of good stories to talk about, and he's good friends with the one Brett Phillips.
Well, we'll let you two share that story. That'll be about 1:35, 1:30. And right now, you got standings ready to roll there, my friend?
Sure, I can pull up the standings real quick for you.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll recognize our affiliates. Of course, the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, first of all, the 2-Minute Sports Update is at 8 a.m. every Saturday on Sunshine 96.7 FM. Start your day with a recap. It's just kind of a snapshot, a snippet, if you will. I'm going to get Ben involved in the Big O, mix it up a couple times a week. But and then it's on 7 o'clock on the entire Tantalk family of stations, and that's 106.1 FM, AM 1340, AM 1350, Dade City, AM 1400 Zephyr Hills, and the 104.2 FM and 102.3 FM every day, 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. It's just a snippet. We have a lot of people listening that aren't diehard over-the-top sports fans, but it's nice to have a little information. You go into a meeting, you're having coffee with people, and they bring it up. conversationally, and that's what I try to provide you each and every day, Monday through Friday. And now let's go from Ferg's from the front row, standings.
All right, so the standings for today for the AL East, we have the Yankees still at the top of it, 61 wins, 23 losses, and I'm sure we'll get into more about the Yankees with our guests, with how they're doing. The Rays are right behind them. We've kind of bumped up a little bit, 45 and 38, with the Red Sox close behind, 45 and 39. We did take 2 out of 3 against the Red Sox, which is great for us in the second half of this of the season. Then we have the Blue Jays, 45 and 40, and the Orioles at the bottom, 41 and 44. AL Central, the Twins are leading 47-39. Astros 55-29.
You meant the cheaters.
Yeah, the cheaters. We all know that, the asterisks. And for the National League, with the NL East, we have the Mets still at the top, 52-32. They've been struggling a little bit against the Braves. In the NL Central, we have the Brewers, 48 wins, 37 losses. With the NL West, we have the Dodgers, 54-29. So it's looking pretty good, though, for the Rays. I'm excited for them. They have a lot of guys coming back from injuries.
We got 11 on the 60-day right now. Mm-hmm. So if they can just stay in the hunt for a wild card opportunity and everybody comes back, they'll be a team to be dealt with.
Yeah, with the return of Glasnow, he's been throwing some bullpens. He's been looking really good. And Brandon Lau, he should be returning I believe this coming week is what they were saying, if all looks good.
Okay, so we'll talk a little baseball and then we'll talk soccer. So the All-Star game lineups in the AL and the NL came out. Okay. And do I need to keep you on top of the baseball world?
No, I'm right there with it. I thought the voting was still going on. I didn't realize it was finished.
The starters have been announced yesterday, and now there's debate on who should be the starting pitcher for the American League. Our own Shane
McClanahan.
Yeah.
He's been dominating. Shane McClanahan is nothing short of spectacular.
Or Verlander, 39 years old. Give the old man his respect because the numbers are pretty pretty paralleled. And there's a lot of debate out there. And being an old school guy and being old, I do believe that Verlander should get the start because it's an exhibition, if you will.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially now that the game really doesn't count for anything. You don't get the home field advantage. As much as, you know, we might be biased here trying to pull for our guy McClanahan, but I do agree that you got to give it to the old guy. You got to give him his dues. He's earned it, and he definitely deserves to get the start for the All-Star game.
Well, I'm glad you concurred with me.
All right, we're on the same page. How about that?
Well, that's beautiful. So you got the starters lined up yet there for me?
It is loaded.
All right, throw
right
a curve at you.
So let's see.
No real surprises, I don't think. One of the cool things is Manny Machado, actually the starter at third base. He's only the second player to play third base in the AL and the NL All-Star game, and Nettles was the last one, and he was with the Yankees. And who was he with in the NL? I can't remember. Greg Nettles, former New York Yankee. So those are the only two third basemen. So nice little factoid on Manny Machado.
Yeah, so catchers we have for the NL, Wilson Contreras.
Chicago Cubs.
There you go.
Hey, only Cubby probably getting in.
Yeah, probably.
A sniff.
For the AL, we have Alejandro Kirk for Toronto. Not too familiar with him, if I'm being at all honest. I don't follow the catchers like that.
You know, they get no respect. Just because you're a pitcher, you should love them, dude.
Well, the catchers
there
didn't like...
There should be a bond between... They didn't like you because you were a freaking submariner.
I was a sidewinder. You know, most of the time, they were giving me a hard time telling me not
to... What the hell is he throwing at me?
Yeah, I threw my little slider, the little frisbee that would break on in there. And, you know, a lot of guys would miss that, hit him right in their chest protector. So I didn't make a lot of friends in the catching department. First base, though, for the NL, we have Paul Goldschmidt. So that... He's a stud.
He's the real deal.
And then for the AL, we have Vlad Guerrero Jr., one of my favorite players.
That's two Blue Jays giving an indication what's going to take place in the East here in the future.
Uh-huh. Second base, we have NL Jazz Chisholm with Miami, another very great guy. He had a lower back strain for a little while. He's been on the injury list. Then we have in the AL, Jose Altuve, still a great player as much as we like to give him...
Cheater.
Yeah, he's still a cheater. But he has been performing recently, and even with all the cheating, not even allegations, but, you know, the actual
facts are
actual facts. Third base, we have Manny Machado. Fantastic. AL, Rafael Devers, another great guy from Boston. NL, Trey Turner. AL, Tim Anderson.
That's I love Trey Turner.
Yeah, Trey Turner's pretty good. He's now a two-time All-Star, and he'll get the start.
I just like his hustle, man.
Yeah, and he'll be starting in front of the Los Angeles crowd. So it's only he's the second.
I'm not a Dodger fan. I just like guys that hustle.
Oh, yeah. You don't see a lot of that in today's game. Guys kind of lackadaisical. A lot of guys don't run out, pop flies.
It's infuriating.
Oh, it really is. You see a lot of these guys. When
I would like to see a factoid on how many of these incidents across the league actually impact games where a guy could have gone on base if he would have hustled.
Yeah. That
they should be fined every time they don't hustle.
No, I totally agree with you, and I think that comes down to the management. The management of these teams need to get on these guys to let them know, hey, we're playing baseball. Exactly. Well, now that they're making multi-millions of dollars, I don't know if they feel like they need to worship them and, you know, grovel at their feet in order to get them to do something. But
that's the problem with sports, mentality. But I'm an old-school old man, and that's like look what Buck Showalter's done with the Mets. He's not taking any BS.
Oh yeah, and I love.
He doesn't care.
Even if they are in a little rough patch right now, I mean they're in a tough division. I mean they have the
Braves left for Yin Yang.
And shortstop we have Trey Turner, LA, AL Tim Anderson, DH we have Bryce Harper.
But you guys broke thumb. That's just the votes.
Yeah, just the votes. Bryce Harper. Not a big fan of Bryce Harper. Always thought he was.
I think he's a hole. I told you, watching him up, I can't think of the name now, at Spectrum when I work with the Ted Williams Foundation, mm-hmm. I like to watch athletes, how they interact with kids.
Yeah.
And on three occasions, I was up there with the Ted Williams Foundation with Dave and his gang and watched them. And this is spring training, man. Mm-hmm. Not a fan, yeah. Very aloof and distant from the kids.
A guy who I am a fan of, though, in the AL is Shohei Ohtani. This is his second
election. Oh, my God. Did you see what he's been doing lately?
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Four games in a row with 10 strikeouts or more and drove in runs.
Mm-hmm.
He's the modern-day Babe Ruth.
He's a generational talent, and I am absolutely thrilled that he's
emotionless for the most part, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking for a big smile or, you know, or jumping up and down.
And it seems like he's great in the clubhouse with the other guys. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos of him doing little, you know, when you're in a game, there's a lot of downtime in baseball. And there's a neat video of them trying to get a baseball stuck on the second step of the dugout. And the camaraderie between the players, it seems like he really gets along with them. And he's just a class act and a great talent for baseball. And he's also, after becoming the first player to start an All-Star game on the mound and lead off for his team a year ago, Ohtani will be back at the AL starting lineup as the DH. And he's the two-way superstar, just absolutely fantastic. And he has 26 homers with an MLB leading 1.076 OPS in 2022.
All right, well, that's our baseball conversation. We got plenty more, but right now it's time to talk to our soccer expert. He is Buster DeLay, calling in from up in, you're in North Carolina or South Carolina, young man?
North Carolina.
Well, it's cooler up there, and I'm sure you're enjoying yourself.
No, so let's. It's not. I can guarantee you it's not cooler whatsoever. It's hotter.
So let's talk a little soccer. I'm going to turn it over to you, and you pick the topic, and let's rock and roll, buddy, because if there's anybody that knows soccer, it's Buster DeLay.
All right. Well, we can start with the Rowdies. I think that's always a good place to start, local here in Tampa Bay. The Rowdies have been doing fairly well in the past couple games, beating some of their rivals and teams that they've had a hard time beating, especially last year with Pittsburgh, who haven't lost a game at Highmark Stadium since 2021, about this time last year. And the Rowdies went ahead and smashed them 5-2. So we always take that. And then recently beating another rival. And next week coming up against Hartford Athletic. Or sorry, today coming up against Hartford Athletic. So hopefully we can get another result there.
And that's at home, right?
Yes. No, away. It is away. The next home game is going to be Atlanta United. And the one that you're probably thinking of that was a home was the Memphis game that they just played, where they played first place Memphis and they beat them 2-0, which was a massive result because the Rowdies were in third, Memphis were in first, and they really need to get the result.
Well, we know that. In fact, I'll have media passes for you when you get home, and we know that the entire organization has embraced 15-year-old Buster DeLay as our correspondent. But more so, they basically have befriended you because of your loyalty and your knowledge. And I think it's a superb story, regardless of your dad and I being friends. If I didn't know you from a load of hay. You've done a superb job, and you got all kinds of opportunities ahead of you in the world of soccer. You got to be having a blast as a young man.
I am. I enjoy doing this stuff, getting face to face with players like this. It really means something.
All right, let's switch gears and talk the global game of soccer that you're in tune to, and of course, a lot going on these days. I try to stay on top of it, but I figure I've got you, and I've got my son, and I've got his buddy lives in Amsterdam. That keep me posted, but let's talk about what's happening on the worldwide side.
Well, a lot of leagues are out right now, so there's a lot of signings going on coming for the next season. A lot of teams are playing in preseason, but the thing that's really catching the eye of global fans right now is going to be the World Cup coming up later this year, and then the Women's Euros going on right now. And the thing that's catching my eye even more is not just the World Cup this year, but the World Cup in 2026, because it's going to be hosted in the United States and Mexico and Canada.
Have they selected sites yet? I know when I was in Denver, there was a lot of conversation. Denver wants it. Orlando wants it. I think Atlanta. Are they getting any closer to sites here in the U.S.?
Yep, they decided everything in Mexico, USA, and Canada. And I can't remember every single one off the top of my head, but I do know Atlanta got one and Miami got one. I don't believe Orlando got one, but Atlanta is the one that I'm definitely rooting to try to see, because Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's got upwards of 70,000, 80,000 capacity. I've been there before when it was chock full of about 60,000 Atlanta United supporters. It was just spectacular.
Buster, there's an event over in Saudi Arabia that they're going to host, and there's a lot of political issues regarding that, and a lot of people upset because it won't be easy for fans to travel. What am I talking about there? I know I've seen glimpses of it, and I've seen things online.
I think you're talking about in Qatar. Is it the World Cup coming up this year? Probably the biggest sporting event in the game, and It's going to be an exciting one. There's a lot of good teams there. With Qatar hosting it, they can definitely be an underdog that could go far. The USA is going to be playing in it. One game against England as well, I know, is going to draw a lot of fan attention, USA versus England.
But have you seen a lot of people that are upset about that, them being able to host it there? And it prices the common fan out of the ability to go to the games. And as well as a lot of restrictions, you know, when they're in their government.
I haven't really been following that too much. I've watched more of just like what team is going to be facing who and the general prediction for the playing side of things. I haven't been following it politically too much.
Okay, now let's talk about another opportunity that's fallen your way, and we've talked about it before, but we keep expanding our audience. And you'll be on the call for women's soccer, is that right?
Yeah, we're thinking about it. It was with a couple guys I was talking to a couple of weeks, months ago. We were looking into doing something like that. We were going to see if I could try to get on their broadcast and production team for the summer, but it was ultimately kind of short notice. I was pretty busy, but in the future, I would definitely like to incorporate that. I don't know, like, if with school or other opportunities that if I work hard could fall my way. I don't know if like how everything will balance out, but that's definitely something that I want to try to do, is go with the upcoming women's leagues in the USL and work with a couple guys I like.
Well, I don't know if you heard this news, and I just heard it yesterday, broke that Tampa's going to have indoor soccer. Have you heard about that?
I have not.
Yeah, it was announced yesterday. There's going to be four teams to launch it, and you know, we had arena football. Well, actually, the Rowdies started as indoor soccer back in the 70s, and my friend Mark Lindsay, who I'm going to get on, and I need to introduce you to Mark. He's a pioneer of soccer in this area. He's from England, from Bristol, actually. And so it's nothing new, indoor soccer, to people that have been around for decades. And what do you think about having indoor soccer in this market?
Definitely a good idea, because I know a lot of players that are up and coming start in futsal, which is like a indoor type of soccer. So I think with it going on a competitive market, a lot of players are going to want to do that when they're developing, or if they want to just continue their entire career in it. And it's also going to draw a lot of fan attention because of the players that want to go in it and how it can lead up or be a complete alternative to the game that's played outdoors.
Now, is there a big difference between indoor soccer compared to what the Rowdies do? As somebody who knows practically nothing about soccer.
He's a baseball guy.
I'm a baseball guy, so I know more about football than real football, I guess.
I also don't know a ton about indoor soccer. I mainly follow the outdoor game. But I do believe it's a little bit different, probably a smaller field size, smaller amount of players, but I'm not the guy to ask about that because I don't really follow indoor too well.
Well, I know how arena football was received, and if they run it in the off season for the Rowdies, there's no doubt that it'll probably be successful because there's so many young guys like you that love the sport, and this area is becoming very international. I know that just being down here at Ferg's. So I think the indoor game will be a successful, and hopefully they have an alliance with the Rowdies and work in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, that would help. That would help strengthen it a lot. Definitely make it more citywide, area-wide, and let the Tampa Bay area know a lot about it if the Rowdies can promote them. Because I tell you what, the Rowdies have a heck of a fan base down here, being Tampa's oldest sports club. So if they can get that around, it would definitely help the indoor game a lot in the area.
Well, Buster, how do our audience get your World Soccer Reports? Where are they located? And do a little promo for that. And then I'll let you get back to enjoying your Saturday afternoon, youngster.
All right. So if you want to find the World Soccer Report or the World Soccer 180, you can go to Hoovy.tv is where they're both located. The World Soccer Report also is on Spotify if you search up The World Soccer Report, not all one word. And you can find all of my shows archived from, I believe, in fact, my demo is still up there. I think it's been about a year now. So I think you can find just about every single one. And, of course, Radio St. Pete Online, the archives, when it airs, be sure to check it out.
All right, Buster. As always, I appreciate your vast knowledge and expertise in the world of soccer, and still amazed at how much you retain and regurgitate and deliver. And we're very fortunate to have you involved in Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. I need to get you some more swag to wear up in North Carolina or anywhere that you're traveling these days. I gave your pops some to give to you, so we'll see you soon down here, okay?
All right, I appreciate you having me on.
All right, he's Buster DeLay, and I know you're not a soccer guy. Do you know anything about it?
I know a little bit about it. I mean, I've been to a Rowdies game once or twice, and I feel like I know more about the stadium, Al Lang, than I do about the team. I know the Rays ownership owns at least a part or owns all of the Rowdies, correct?
All of it now.
All of it. Wow, that's great. I mean, hopefully that continues to grow the game, and maybe, you know, if they do the indoor portion, maybe it'll be connected to the Rays a little bit, and, you know, maybe they'll hold it at the Trop. I have no idea where they'd be holding it, but anything indoors for me, I welcome it, because I loved going to arena football. That was some of the most fun I've ever had, is going to those games.
Well, I was addicted to arena football, being from Des Moines, Iowa, the founder of arena football, Jim Foster. We'll talk about that another time, but right now, and I know you're going to love this conversation, being the baseball player and historian and expert you are, this is Jeff Mangold. He's a friend of mine from Northwest Iowa, Sioux City, Iowa, and he's kind enough to join us. He's been on several times. How are you, Jeffrey?
Mike, good afternoon. I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice here.
Well, thank you, buddy. I hope the audience wants to hear my voice. I'd rather they hear from you. But let's go over your bio one more time, because we've expanded our platform and our audience. Of course, you were born and raised in Sioux City, Iowa. Went to Bishop Phelan High School. A year ahead of me. We won't tell the audience what year that was.
Go Crusaders.
Exactly. And then you went to, did you go to St. Ambrose?
Yes, St. Ambrose in Davenport. And Davenport, Iowa, southeastern Iowa. A lot of Chicago and Peoria.
All right.
Kids.
I'll let you finish the rest of it. I know you made a stint for your grad school over to Nebraska, and then you can take your career from there for us.
Yeah, Mike. So I got out of St. Ambrose. They pushed me out of there in 1977. And from there, I went to, as a volunteer assistant with the strength and conditioning program at the University of Nebraska. Just very lucky to latch on to that position, and spent my time there for 2.5-3 years, back with some powerhouses, back with Tom Osborne as the head coach, but with Andre Franklin and Jarvis Redwine and Junior Miller, and just some powerful teams, and a lot of powerful teams coming in there to play, back with Barry Switzer at Oklahoma and those guys. And then I moved my way up to where I was the next assistant to be hired if another team was going to call University of Nebraska as far as a strength and conditioning coach to head up their program. And the University of Florida, the Gators, came a-calling, and I said, you know what, it's time to get paid, because I never was paid at Nebraska, just a volunteer. Went down there to Gainesville, interviewed, and I said, man, I am coming down here. This is a up-and-coming possibility of another powerhouse building. And sure enough, it was. And so I was at the University of Florida for 3 years. That's where I met my beautiful wife, Gail, and also made some contacts with the New York Yankees, that George Steinbrenner, being a big booster of the Gators, he contacted the University of Florida wanting to know if there's somebody to possibly lead a strength and conditioning program for the New York Yankees. And I heard wind of this, and I said, shoot, I'll go to New York and interview. I've never been to New York before. And hopped on a plane, went up there, and ended up being the gentleman that they selected for the position. So that was in 1984, where things were, any type of strength and conditioning or strength training was a little bit taboo at the time for Major League Baseball players. So there was some definite ice to break, Mike.
Well, you broke the ice and developed the program. And let's talk about how receptive originally some of the superstars were on those lineups, and how you convinced them. And then, unbeknownst to a lot of probably Yankee fans out there, you went across town to the hated New York Mets for a short stint.
Yeah, I double dipped there. Not too many people, player or coaches, have done that. Just a handful. Joe Torre, one. Yogi Berra, another one. And myself. Lee Mazzilli, a couple other people. But, back in 1984, it was Babe Winfield, Don Mattingly, Mike Pagliarulo, Guidry, Rick Cerrone, Phil Niekro, those old school fellas. And it had to take my time to try to initiate a strength and conditioning program with these guys. And I knew it was a different breed of cat from a college football player to a Major League Baseball player. So you, to begin with, had to treat them with kid gloves a little bit. Had to be a good listener. You had to listen to these guys, and then not to come in and just to try to take over what they have done in the past, but just to feed them a little bit, educate them a little bit, and to get their trust. So that was big. But one name that stood out as far as being a supporter that really helped me, and God rest his soul up in heaven, was Don Baylor. He was a hell of a leader, and he was a supporter of mine. And a lot of times, whatever Don Baylor said or whatever Don Baylor did, that would go. And so he really stood out. He was a great supporter.
So who came calling to get you back to the Bronx Bombers? Was it George himself threatening you?
No, this is after I was for my second stint, which was 1984 through 1988 was my first term with them. Then George kicked me out the door for whatever reason, and which happens. And then I went to work for the Mets from 1993 through 1996. So that was 4 years with the Mets with Bobby Bonilla, Jeff Kent, Ray Ordonez, quite a few other people, of course, but those are some more of the prominent names. But then Bobby Valentine came in to be the manager of the Mets, and he wanted to make a change, which happens, and I was one of the personnel to be let go. And so a few months later, Gene Monahan, who was the head athletic trainer for almost 40 years with the Yankees, who I worked with in my previous stint, he gave me a call at home one day, and he said, "Jeff," he said, "listen, we're getting ready to possibly make a change here, and if you're interested in coming back here, let me know." I said, "Gino, there's no deliberating here. I'm very, very interested." So he said, "Well, hang tight. We'll get back to you." And so that's how I began my second term with them back in 1998. So it was 1998 through 2006 was the second time that I was with them.
Not bad timing to return to the glory days of the Yankees and success. And you got a few rings. Yeah, you got a few rings in your house.
Yeah, very very lucky. I came aboard there, and I think the shelves were stocked. You might say there was plenty of groceries in the kitchen, and I think very relative to possibly the current season that the 2022 Yankees are having is I think these guys today, I think they expect to win every day, and if they don't, they're pissed, they're upset, and that's one aspect that in 1998 that I quickly saw was these guys wanted to win every day. Many people do, but they expected to win every day. And just leadership, not just from the front office and ownership, but within the team itself, that there's the activities that go on that the public eye doesn't see. And for that time period, for that three consecutive World Series championship, 1998 through 2000, that, you know, players like Tino Martinez, Bernie Williams, Andy Pettit, Joe Girardi, these guys, Mariano Rivera, quietly just leading the way that he would, just David Cohn, these guys would just, if somebody was out of line a little bit, they would get back in line quickly from the in-house leadership.
Well, what amazing lineup of names you just delivered to us. I want to introduce you to my new number one draft pick, I call him. It's Ben Botham's his name, Jeff, and he's from down here, Seminole High, and he pitched at Savannah State. He's a submariner. He was a sidewinder. He's only 23 years old, but he's an old soul, and he loves the history of baseball, and he's actually involved in being a historian for baseball. So to say he's hello to him.
Is it Ben, you said?
Yeah, Ben Botham.
Ben. Glad to meet you, Ben. Good morning.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, you mentioned a lot of great names there. I mean, Mariano Rivera, he was probably my inspiration to be a closing pitcher. I loved watching him growing up. But you mentioned Bernie Williams. I've gotten to meet him once or twice, and I know that he's quite accomplished on the old guitar, and I was wondering if he ever serenade you a little bit with some melodies on there in the clubhouse?
Well, he did. I can't remember what year it was, but it was when Paul Simon came to the stadium. I think it was on what they were doing with Joe DiMaggio Day, or of might have been on July 4th, but in collaboration with celebrating Joe DiMaggio, and where Paul Simon played that song of "Where Have You Gone, Joe DiMaggio?" In center field, right before the game, but prior to that, Paul Simon was with Bernie in the clubhouse at Bernie's locker, and they were going through guitar notes and stuff and singing. But Bernie would always have his guitar on when we would travel. So Bernie would be getting off the plane, on the plane, he'd have his guitar over his shoulder, strapped on to his back. So he was prepping for his next career early on. But yeah.
Well, I think I told you I ran into him in my neighborhood tiki bar, and I've had a conversation with him again. He came down there, and the youngster sitting across from me, his girlfriend, works for an organization that, for a company actually, that does guitar straps and all kinds of accessories. And the CEO dates Bernie Williams, and his girlfriend has met Bernie on several occasions. So what a small world it's become with Bernie Williams as the topic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's how he is. He's just an easygoing son of a gun, and made tremendous strides as a player from a young player to, I remember when he first signed and he came to the stadium from Puerto Rico. He was an 18 or 19 year old young. He was a track star in high school in Puerto Rico, and I remember him coming to the clubhouse. And that's the first time I met him. And he was just, he probably weighed about 180 pounds then, and lean and thin. And he grew into his body and grew into one heck of a player.
Let's talk about, and then we'll talk about you as an author. Let's do a comparison. When you look at this 2022 team, and everybody's talking about it, I mean, it's just amazing. I watched them last night against the Red Sox, and it just, as you said, they expect to win, but... And you said, you know, the team in 1998. How do you think they'd match up? Because one of the things that this team has, that Ben alluded to earlier in the show, is pitching that nobody anticipated. And you had the arms during that era. Some, you know, all Hall of Famers, for cripe's sakes, from closers to starters. I think that's the key for both of those dynasties. And do you think this team, if they keep it together, could be a dynasty?
Yeah, I think so. One thing, they're staying healthy. And they're staying on the field for the most part. And I counted up the amount of times they've scored 13 times this season. They've scored 10 or more runs. I mean, and that's in about, I think they've played about 85 games, almost 90 games. I think about 85 games. That's a run producing capability. But, and it's, one thing that's yet to be seen is if these over the years is the ability to win without hitting the long ball. Back in the 98 to 2000 and 2001, that era, those teams, we could score and win without hitting home runs. That to do the little things, to go first to third, to lay a bunt down, to run out. Run the bases hard to put the pressure on the defense. It's those little things that add up, and they have a superior bullpen that can come in the fifth or sixth inning and shut things down and hand it off to a primo closer like Mariano.
Well, you're describing how the Tampa Bay Rays have stayed alive in that division for the last, since 2008 when they had success, and they're hanging on by a thread this year and still astonish me. Maybe you should come out of retirement because they've got 11 guys on the IL. They might need a new trainer.
Boy, you know, I might have to make a trip down there, make a phone call. That's fine.
They got 11 guys on the 60-day right now, which is unbelievable.
They're running out of ink.
All right, so you have this amazing career. You worked closely and you respected the heck out of him, Joe Torre. Share one George Steinbrenner story with our audience, and then we'll go to the book because you know he's still an icon down here in this area, and I love a couple of the stories that you've shared prior.
Yeah, with George. One of the first stories with George was, this is my first year in 1984, spring training, and I believe we had played the Mets in a spring training game, and we gotten beat. So George is upset. He doesn't want to get beat by the Mets ever, even in spring training. And Also, he was upset that there was, he thought that somebody was leaking information to the media from our meetings or from meetings with George. So we're called into a meeting in his trailer in the parking lot down in Fort Lauderdale prior to training in Tampa. We were in Fort Lauderdale. So it was myself, Mark Connor, Luke Pinella, Gene Monahan. Yogi was the manager at the time. And Stick Michael was one of the coaches. And so we sit down, and Steinbrenner goes, "Tell you what, right now I'm upset. Somebody's leaking information to the media around here. I don't know who it is, but we're going to find out what's going on." And he goes, "You know what, Mangold, I want you to get up, go outside, and I want you to look around and look under the trailer. I don't want anybody, any reporters around here listening to what we got to say." And I thought he was joking at first.
Under the trailer?
Yeah. So I get up. I said, "I better do what the boss says here, you know." So I walked, opened the door, walked down the four steps down to the parking lot from his trailer. I look around, don't see anyone. I said, "I better get down on my hands and knees and check underneath the trailer just to make sure." So nobody was there. So I go back in. I said, "George, we're good to go. There's nobody. We're good. Nobody in the trailer. So let's go ahead. Proceed."
Oh my, that's taking it to the extent. But he was a lot more of a giving person than portrayed in many cases. Now, I've had accomplished author Peter Gollenbach on several times. He lives right down here within walking distance of Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. And he wrote The Bronx Zoo. You're probably familiar with some of his work. He said, George did not care for Peter Gollenbach.
I see. Yeah, he's either he loves you or he hates you. But sometimes you don't know which is which. But it's amazing when he would come to town, it would be like the Pope is coming to. When you're in New York City, it was like the Pope was coming. Everybody, the custodians would be out mopping the hallways. Everybody make sure all the lights were working, were changed. Any papers out in the parking lot, everything's picked up. But he drew a crowd and respect, and you knew when George was going to be around. It was great.
You know, I love to see his son Hal, and this is just as a kid growing up as a Yankee fan. I like to see Hal have some success because, you know, everybody is, you know, for ever since George passed, essentially said Hal's not tough enough. He's not George. He's not the old man. Well, nobody's the old man. And I hear that, you know, Hal is a nice human being. And it'd be great if they did get a couple more pennants and World Series banners under his tutelage.
Yeah, probably in due time. They've been close quite often. I mean, they're on record pace right now for most wins in a regular season. And that's all well and good. But then it comes down to a gunfight when you get into the playoffs and postseason. It is who's hot at the right time, and just the little things of hanging a slider or a curveball or a ball being fair by 1 inch versus being foul. That's where it all starts all over again. Everything is even when the playoffs start.
Or not running it out, as Ben and I are talking about. We see too often in today's generation. But let's go to Jeff Mangold, the author. I mean, you had a front row seat, you know, for a couple of decades, to a seat that people that would just die to hear these stories. So you went ahead and collaborated and you wrote a book. Let's talk a little bit about your book.
Yes, so that was, like you said, Mike, that to be in such a unique situation that over the years I've been speaking with friends and colleagues, and I'd be telling some stories or reminiscing a little bit. They said, "Jeff, you know what? You need to write a book. You need to go ahead and put pen to paper." And so I finally decided to do that about a year and a half ago. And just to share with sports fans, baseball fans, businessmen, women alike, just of some of the trials and tribulations in a person's lifetime, some of the hurdles that I had to go through to reach a point of working in the major leagues, and not just working in the major leagues, but then to really have a lot of success, and how things can happen to you if you really stick with it and don't give up, and if you're in the right place at the right time, and if you communicate with people. I've told my kids over the years, I said, each day is a new day. You never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to come in contact with, and just treat everybody with respect, and you never know what might come from that. But I just wanted to share that with the public and to capture a lot of the unique situations, stories for those years of 17 years in Major League Baseball, that some of the activities that go on, and to get that from pen to paper.
Well, and I'm sure, because, you know, the people, Ben and I ran into Lou Piniella back in, I think it was May, at an event over in Tampa, and I brought your name up again, and he smiled, and it's obvious, you know, I got the same reaction out of Bernie Williams, that the players enjoyed you and your attitude and your professionalism, so you probably didn't have any problems when you called them for, you know, to let them know that you were going to do this book and get some of their input.
Right, Mike. I haven't had one challenge or one communication regarding you know, hey Jeff, what the heck are you doing here? What are you talking about? Because it's everything that is mentioned is true, and I feel good about that. And the name of the book is Power and Pinstripes, and it was by, you know, Triumph Books is the publisher that collaborated with me, and Mariano Rivera was gracious enough to write the foreword for me. Peter Boddy was assisted in the writing of the book. He's a sports writer for the New York Post, and it's been a pleasure to write it and to see a lot of the smiles and comments from people that have read the book, and to get feedback from them.
How do our audience get it? It's on Amazon, obviously, right?
Yeah, they could go to Amazon, and it's available on Amazon or at your local Barnes and Noble stores, and they can contact me email wise at jeffmangold23@gmail.com, or follow me on Instagram at jeff_mangold23, and on Twitter, it's @Jeff_Mangold23, but mainly through Amazon or to go right through Barnes and Noble. It'd be work out, but it'd be a great sports read, and it's a good motivating factor for young kids and for adults alike.
So
great
stories. So I don't know if y'all's times lined up quite right, but my at Seminole High School, our strength coach, Coach JJ, I think it was JJ Johnson. I believe he was the chaplain for the Yankees for a short period of time. I wasn't sure if the two of you crossed paths.
No, I don't. Not because I didn't go to chapel, but because he wasn't there at that time. No, but yeah. Especially because most of the time chapel was held in the weight room.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was. He might have been just with the minor leagues here down in the St. Pete, Tampa Bay area.
Yeah.
But yeah,
sure.
So how was working with Mariano Rivera? You know, he's a hero of mine, and I've seen him, you know, give specials on ESPN or on MLB Network. What kind of guy was he like?
Yeah, he was one of the players where you realize you don't need to recreate the wheel with him, but he's like a thoroughbred racehorse. Just get him warmed up a little bit and let him go run, let him go perform. But Mariano was aware enough and smart enough to realize that he did need to maintain his muscular strength and conditioning during the year. So he would train with me, and he really paid a lot of attention to his legs and to his torso and core. And from there, you didn't need to do much with Mo. God gifted him just psychologically, his approach, his calmness, and his confidence, but along also with his off-the-charge physical capabilities, which a lot of people might not know of, that he would have been an unbelievable center fielder.
I heard that he would work out in the seventh inning before he would come in to pitch. Is that true?
No, he wouldn't. With Mo, he wouldn't even go out to the bullpen until about the sixth or seventh inning. He'd be in the locker room, be in the clubhouse. He'd get a massage. He would massage, take a shower, and then get dressed, and then go out to the bullpen.
Man, so, I wish I had that when I was pitching. All we had was some Taco Bell in the bullpen.
Taco Bell?
Oh yeah, we'd Uber Eat some Taco Bell down to the bullpen every once in a while during our games, because we get a little hungry out there.
Whatever it takes. You gotta find out what works.
Oh my God! Well, Jeffrey, it's been a pleasure. This is our third time doing this, and hopefully many more. I appreciate you coming on board. How's your summer been going? How was your 4th of July?
Yeah, it was great. We were actually up in the New York, New Jersey area for a week. Did a book signing up there, and then also just see some friends from our where we used to live up there. We've been down here in right outside of Wilmington, North Carolina now for 2 years, in Leland, North Carolina. But so we had a good visit up there, and but it's been hot and humid, but it's good golf weather. How's that?
Well, I had golf show right before this. We need to get you next spring. Why don't you put on your calendar to come down to Tampa, go see your friends at the Yankees. We'll do a book signing here at Ferg's, because this is the largest sports bar in all of Tampa Bay area, they say, in Florida. And we could do a book signing here and have an absolute blast. I get Donnie Charleston to drive up from Naples and have a Crusader reunion and a book signing with Jeff Mangold. How about that?
Mike, that sounds like that's a great idea. Fabulous.
I'm not going to let you up on it. I'm gonna have Donnie bug the hell out of you, and I'm gonna be persistent.
Yeah, he'll be my bodyguard.
Yeah, he could be a bodyguard for a lot of people, even at his age now.
That's it. Yeah, he knows how to get it done.
All right, my man.
Pleasure talking to you, Ben. Nice meeting you. Continued success, you guys. Keep it going.
Thanks very much. And he's Jeff Mangold, and I tell you what, he was 2 years ahead of me in high school. And just the most mild-mannered cat you ever met. I could see him getting the confidence, these guys, quiet confidence, as they say, because of his knowledge, his professionalism. You know, you see some trainers that are over the top, you know, just raging, push, push, push. That's not his personality. That's not his delivery. That's probably why people welcomed.
It's really tough to get the respect of, or for the players to get the respect of the coaches like that, because a lot of guys, they come in, especially strength trainers, they'll come in and they act like they're all that and that they know what they're doing, and it just either they rub the pitch the wrong way or...
Well, look who he's working with.
Exactly. And that speaks to his credit, that he was able to get the respect of these amazing Hall of Fame athletes, and especially such a great team as the Yankees during that era, went in several World Series. It really speaks to how great of a coach he was, and strength of coach. And
Well, and like I said, the book. I'm not quite done with it, but I'll get it to you. I'll tell you a quick story, and then we'll go to Dave McCarthy from the Ted Williams Foundation. It was 2001, and my buddy from New York City came down here, diehard Yankee fan, to meet me and my kids. I'd come down from Iowa for spring training, and he wanted to stay on the beach and have good times. Hey, let's go to the Yankees game. Here's how naive I was. I thought, this is 2001.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.